Let's talk a little more about the Mindvention. So tell me what, when you got involved, you've been coming here for a number of years.
I think pretty much since the beginning. I think I've pretty much been here every year. I don't know if there's a year that I have missed.
Because you've lived here in Vegas for how long?
I think I've been here around a dozen years.
Okay. And this has been going on for 10 years, so yeah, you probably haven't missed many of these.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself really as a mentalist or a magician?
Both.
Okay. We had that conversation. You're on the board, or the panel.
I think it's easier for people, if I say I'm a magician, it's... takes a lot less explaining than if I was to say I was a mentalist.
That's very true.
But people do know what a mentalist is, and of course there's a popular show, but magician usually doesn't need as much as explaining.
How do you explain yourself as a mentalist when people ask you, say, well, you like that guy on TV or something? Or,
well, I say, yeah, I do similar things like that, but those are TV magicians, and... you know, perhaps I could show you something here in real life, you know, that's not on TV that I ponder.
And do you tell them I'm going to be reaching inside of your head or I'm going to try to do something?
No, not really. I mean, I might say something like I want to try something on you. The party's down here. Everybody's coming by and waving to us.
So you don't tell them that, you know, you're going to see something amazing.
I wouldn't start out with mentalism either, though, if I was to perform for somebody. I'd probably want to do some type of magical effect first and then end with the mind reading.
That's interesting because you've just hit upon something I have never discussed with anybody before, and it has to do with just the order in which you do magic and mentalism. Because the other night when we were talking about the mentalism versus magic, that should they go together, and you were saying in the panel that yes, you should, but what order should they go in there? In other words, should there be magic first to kind of satisfy that need, or do you do mentalism first?
I think it's magic first, and only because I feel the mentalism is stronger and it's the more believable of the art. So in the beginning, to me, I'm playing with them and toying with them, but then I want to move it toward, we don't really know exactly what's going on here.
We kind of got distracted right there. Just saw Teller.
Teller's so here.
Coming by.
And he's talking.
That's right. Talking with Chris. Anyhow, that I think it's important also that you're doing magic because people can relate to that, to cards or whatever else that's going to be something that's tangible as opposed to saying, I am going to do something amazing.
Right.
I like what you're saying when you... yesterday you were saying, I'm going to do three things. You know, I'm going to read your mind, or what was it? What was exactly?
I got to think of where I'm at in the script.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you...
I know what you're thinking.
I'm going to show you things that, one, you've never seen before, two, you will never see again, and three, that you will not forget for the rest of your life.
Right. And you say it with such conviction that...
Well, and then you have to have the material that backs that
back
up,
it up,
though, too. Yeah, I mean, I don't think...
hippity-hop rap is going to cut it.
No, Chinese sticks might not cut it after that.
Yeah. They go, I think I've seen that before. Yeah, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life. That was horrible, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
How would one become a better magician, you think? Is it through reading, through watching, through listening?
I think reading is the best way. I'm glad that I had an opportunity before DVD, and not that I haven't learned from DVD, but... if you see somebody do something, you're tainted toward that picture that they've painted already. Where if you're reading it in a book, you're painting your own picture and you have to put yourself in there. So there's details that must be filled in by your mind. And that's the part
by the mind of the audience.
You're reading that, you're thinking, what am I going to be doing while I'm making these moves? What would I say as I'm presenting this? Where if you're watching somebody else do it, it's usually more of a monkey see, monkey do learning process.
You're right, and then you become just a cookie cutter magician. You know, you're just, you know, what I would call the generic magician or the Muzak magician.
Right.
Just background noise. You know, how do you stand out? How do you brand yourself? How have you made, and by the way, for those of you listening, I forgot to tag this to begin with. Of course, here we are on day number three. And I'm talking with Paul Vigil, by the way.
Yeah, it's nice, Paul, to be here again. Thanks for inviting me.
So, my question
was about branding myself.
Yes.
I don't know so much if I... I think more of what my... What people think of when they're going to get me is magic that will fool most everybody. You mm-hmm. know, a stuff that's like real magic. It's not like balloon twisting or
right.
Clown outfit. You know, like I did a show in California a few years ago, and after I finished, I'll never forget this, because a girl walks up to me and says, "When I heard a magician was going to be here tonight, I was expecting somebody wearing baggy pants and riding a unicycle."
And that was the image that she had in her mind,
right,
of the magician.
Right.
Wow.
Which was very far from where I was standing in my vantage point, but it takes all kinds to make the world go around.
Right. Well, some people have, not the, just the preconception, but it could be that they have seen something in their youth or someone, you know, perhaps at their birthday party, and just as people have takeaway of our magic, that they build it up bigger than what the experience actually was, you know, the way they retell the
right,
story.
Right,
you know,
right.
You can never recreate what they do. And I think the same thing that in a children's mind, that they see a magician who does all these wonderful things, but they also kind of mix messages of other, you know, clowns or whatever entertainers they've had at their party.
Yeah.
And so their memory was, I had fun with this and fun with that, and if I combine the two, this is what I had, this one experience, this one person. Because I can't imagine a magician on a unicycle.
And sometimes,
you know,
it's a stroke of genius, but ketchup is good and Cheerios are good too, but they're not good together.
That is just an excellent metaphor. That's right. So you've been really busy during this convention.
I've been having a blast. Yeah,
you gave us a little mini lecture there yesterday.
I did.
You were on the panel discussion,
and
you were on the show tonight as well. Or
no, I'm not.
You're
actually
done, I guess.
I am done.
Okay.
So it's just hanging out, catching up with old friends, making new friends.
Yeah.
Having the best time that I can.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great.
And it's great. There's a lot more people here than I think there has been the last few years.
Yep.
So
well, I think
really
it's
nice
because the 10th anniversary that has finally crossed that threshold that I think, yep, this convention is going to make it.
It's going to live. Yeah.
It's going to make it.
Well,
exactly.
Again, thanks
Thank
for
you,
inviting
Paul.
Me, Scott.
Appreciate it. Very good. That's Paul Vigil from the day three of the Mindvention. Scotty out. Well, people come from all over the world as well as across the country for the Mindvention. And today, right now, I'm standing here with Michael Chow, one of the co-organizers of Monday Night Magic. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. How are you doing?
Fine. I'm doing very well, buddy. So what year is this, by the way, for Monday Night Magic? How many years
have
we been
are in our 17th season.
17th? They say season. You mean year. Do you call it a year
it is,
or season?
It is a year, but this way we get an extra lip, an extra year on it.
Okay.
Because we just had our 16th anniversary.
Okay.
So we've been through 16 years, but we can say we're in our 17th season.
Yeah, when you say season, it just, you mean you're a New York guy, so kind of talk about Broadway and theater, and so they talk about seasons in theatrical speak kind of a thing. And you've gone through three different places. You're in your fourth place now?
Oh, no, you're way behind. I think we're in our ninth theater.
Is that goodness sakes? Okay. And where is this right now?
We are at the Players Theater on McDougal Street, 115 McDougal, okay, right next to the very famous Café Wa, which many of your listeners will remember from their youth. And on the other side of us is the Comedy Cellar beneath the Olive Tree. So both very famous landmarks.
And you are nestled right in between.
Yes.
And what do they do the other nights? I mean, you guys are doing this on Monday night, so what do you
do? There are other shows that come and go. The theater owner has some ongoing things that he does, and then other shows sort of come and go.
So do you four-wall that with them, or is this what kind of arrangement
you've got? Yeah, we rent the space on Monday
basically
nights.
Basically for Monday nights. And so that's what he does with the others? Or he has his own
deals
or whatever.
Well, yeah, but he also produces his own show there as well.
Okay. And as far as people who are coming in all the time, I mean, you get a lot of people coming in through New York City. And so they're, if someone's interested in performing, they contact you? Or
they send an email to admin or info@magicalnights.com.
Magical Nights.
Magicalnights.com. Mm-hmm. And then usually I will respond with an email that tells them what we need to see.
Sure.
And then that information is sent on to the talent committee, ultimately.
And those who are interested in buying tickets, or if they're going to be in New York City and they want something to do on a Monday night, there's nothing better than going to see Monday Night Magic, which starts at 8 p.m.
8 p.m. every Monday.
Every Monday. And they get tickets where?
At brownpapertickets.com, and that's www.brownpapertickets.com.
Okay. and they can see who is going to be on the bill by going to magicalnights.com, I guess?
MondayNightMagic.com.
MondayNightMagic.com.
Yeah.
You got a lot of websites.
Yeah, we do. Well, Magical Nights is the name of our company that produces Monday Night Magic.
Who are all the partners? You and
Peter Samuelson and Jamie Ian Swiss and Todd Robbins. And unfortunately, our most senior partner is now looking down on us from Magic Heaven. That was Frank Brentz.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Bless that man.
Yes.
And so the... types of acts that you have are stage, mentalism. And I say stage, I mean, it's not a big stage to bring on illusions and everything, I guess.
We actually, this stage is pretty big. You haven't been to the new, the new theater has it's about 20 by 20 stage, and Jason Bishop has come very successfully doing illusions, and Jade is going to be in two weeks doing illusions. And Leon Etienne, who was on America's, he was on America's Got Talent. This season.
Oh, Leon, I'm sorry. Yes. I was thinking Etienne Pradier.
Correct, yeah. So Leon also has very successfully performed illusions at the theater.
Right. But mostly it's kind of a... Well, how many seats theater?
We have 19 rows in this theater, and we seat 200 guests.
Fairly intimate, then, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, you really get to let people see you kind of up close and personal.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have, like, a TV screen or thing.
No. And the concept of the show way back was that the guests would leave feeling like they've been part of it.
Part of the show.
Very visceral.
Well, which is another question. I recall back at the old place, it used to be that we would have close-up magicians that would be performing during the...
Still happens.
Okay. During the intermission.
Yeah, we have... At least two close-up stations, close-up performers, and sometimes three, depending on how big the crowd is.
Yeah. Well, now you're here at my invention, and I don't recall you just sort of coming every year to the convention.
I came the first 2 years, and so I've been absent for the last eight.
And so just happened to meet with your schedule so you can be here on
one. That's very true, actually. I typically am busy, but now as we get older, we want to make sure that we do the things that we want to do.
Yes.
So that's why I'm here.
Oh, here's another guy. Let's talk about Monday night. Let's go to the second night of the week, which is Tuesday night. John Stetson. Hey, John.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Doing good, buddy.
You two geniuses, I didn't know you were acquainted, and it's so nice to be here with the two of you at Mindvention.
That's it.
That's what it's called. We're here, and it's fabulous, and I'm here. One of the reasons is because Michael Chow was a fabulous individual. I recently came back into the fold of Monday Night Magic after a two-year absence, and it just, I say to myself, why?
Why has it been so long?
I've been with my friends, dear friends, who treat everybody so well down there, and the show is so well received, and it's just a beautiful thing.
It's easy to be received when you're John. John Stetson. John just rocked it, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was great.
It's
good to have him back.
Just like last night, I think he did a great job as a roast master.
It happened.
Yeah.
I'm just glad it's something we don't do every Monday.
So tell me about Tuesday Night Magic.
It's going great. And there's
it's
a big...
It's called the Mystery Lounge.
Mystery Lounge.
How many years have you guys had? 20?
Yes, it's going on our 20th year.
So they make us look like children.
And there may very soon be a second Mystery Lounge.
On the same night?
Breaking news.
No.
No.
So it'll be Wednesday night.
In another state.
Oh, okay.
So,
interesting.
So that's an interesting development.
So you say there may be soon, or you're just in negotiations with the location or the individuals? Or how much can you tell?
About as much as I have.
Well, there we go. Next subject.
I think I might have information on that. But I have to apparently be quiet, too.
To go to the Mystery Lounge, and people, we talked about this when we were at dinner the night before, but just since we're on the topic then right now, since they can go to MondayNightMagic.com to find out the schedule, where do they go for the Mystery Lounge to get information?
I believe it's MysteryLounge.com as well.
That makes it very easy.
Please sign on our mailing list.
And that's in Boston, by the way, for those who are
listening. It is in Boston. Yeah. Technically Cambridge, Massachusetts, right across from Harvard Yard. Harvard Yard.
Yeah. You must have lost your accent somewhere along the way.
Well, I had it surgically removed in 1976.
When you became a mentalist.
When I drank, I could still speak the language.
Way back then. On the... roast last night. That was a lot of fun. And you do a lot of preparation, although it looks like it's off the cuff. And there are so many things that seem to be set up that appear impromptu, but you were ready.
Yes and no. I had about four prepared things to say.
Yeah.
And the rest I was wanted to be reflective of everyone else and sort of bounce about and hold it together.
Sure.
That's the way it is emceeing a show. That was the very interesting thing when we started. And I'm sure Michael had the same thing with Monday Night Magic. Is there were a lot of performers who knew how to be, had to do a show, but not how to be, they didn't know how to be in a show. They didn't know
what's the difference?
They didn't know how to be a component of a show. And a lot of, and like our first rule, and I don't know if Michael agrees here, was do they play well with others? And meaning, backstage, and, you look at Michael, this guy works his tail off.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than any of us do in Boston.
I've spent a lot of time with him. I know you.
You can't reach Michael on a Monday.
On a Monday.
He is cutting, pasting, juggling. He works fast and furious to make this show happen. And to be blunt, we don't do any work. Michael...
It just happens. He makes it happen.
Michael does all his work. But
let's be fair... For many, 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 many years, you had David Oliver.
David was involved.
And he did a ton of the work in the background.
He did a lot of the booking for us.
He did, and he did the emails for years. And he also the tech and the sound crew and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. David was the one-man sound crew, setting everything and everyone else's levels and whatnot. And
he did it until he started... To get ill.
There was no one better to be involved in a show than David.
Right.
David, and that's not just our Mystery Lounge shows, but as you and I both know, we produced events other places, and David would have been the staple, the anchor, really. It's David, like the opening act, and plus he'd set sound.
Well, for us as well. I could call David on a Friday night or a Saturday morning and say, David, one of our performers just canceled, and he'd say, I'll be there. And he would... Yeah.
Well, first he'd say, let me check, and he'd flick through a date book, and we knew there was no date there. He had some pages, but we liked to listen to the flick, and because as he flicked it, we knew he was closer to saying yes.
Yeah.
And
and you knew you were in good hands when you
knew you were
yes.
in exceptional hands with David, and he had a very, his very... Because he used to have a very special touch on everything, and it was great. So, yeah, and now Joe Howard is our email, so I don't mean to be totally flipped that we don't do the work. I just mean compared to you.
Yeah,
because Michael works hard.
The Night Magic Review.
That was the fabulous Gil Eagles who just walked by and made a cameo here.
Yes. Now, Ken Weber.
The greatest. Oh, Ken Weber is here.
And we're making the decision.
Guys.
Yay or nay?
Yes.
I need your guidance.
This is big doings. I will be back.
Important stuff.
But I'm a continuous loop, as you
know. Okay, thank you, John. Yes, you are amorphous. And so, anyhow, Michael, I have not had you on as a guest on the Magic Word podcast before, but as I start to close, I want to ask, what is your magic word? It wouldn't necessarily have to be like abracadabra or whatever, but what is it that your life force, your beliefs? What's important to you? What it could be a word or phrase. It could be a magic word that you use. Something that is uniquely you that is important.
The details are what's important.
Details.
Yeah, details.
That is important.
Yeah.
I've not had hundreds of people who give me names words, but details has not been one of them. That's
details.
Very good.
It's. I think the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people are your ability to look after the details.
Yeah, attention to details is the essence of showmanship, as Henning Nelms would say. Then too, great. That was Michael Chout from Monday Night Magic, but we're not there. We're here at Mindvention still on day three. So for our Magic Word podcast, Scotty out. And so we just finished Cachetta's lecture, and I've got Jeff McBride with me now. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, it's great to be here. I'm looking forward to the panel on Q&A with Ross Johnson.
And that's going to be coming up just in a few minutes over here. Mm-hmm. But are you looking forward also then to your afterwards workshop? It's going to be starting tomorrow?
We have the three-day masterclass that we've been holding in conjunction with the Mindvention, and it takes place at the McBride House of Mystery. And one of the world's great mentalists, Ross Johnson, is our master teacher, along with Eugene Berger and the associate dean of the Magic and Mystery School, Larry Haas. And I'm there, and we host 3 days from like 9:30 in the morning, and we work all through the day and even carry on into the evening. But it's a master class. It's a place where performers bring their show and work on their act and get expert coaching and feedback and suggestions on upgrading their techniques from some of the best in the world. It's a very rare opportunity. We only work with a small group of people that want to really go deep into the magic. So the Mindvention is now, I think, one of the world's largest gatherings of
mind readers
and,
world,
and
yeah.
people that are into psychic entertainment and mystery entertainment. And the Master Class for Mentalism is a place where people can really go deep and take really their passion and their performance and what they've learned over the years and really hone it to a professional performance product.
And how many people are attending this year?
This year we have 15 people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we limit the size of the class.
And whenever that they want to submit something to you, do they send like a video and say, this is kind of where I am? Or you try to have a certain level of expertise?
Yes.
You don't have like beginning mentalism?
No, we have some people that come and audit the class that don't perform, so it's a safe place for people to come and just audit, but we keep the level very high.
Yeah.
But it's for people that are really taking their magic to the next level.
And so really, are you working on the fine points of like choreography and direction and that kind of a thing with their act? Or, you know, maybe if you said this here instead of over there? Or
well, you know, a number of years ago, Max Maven was teaching a course at the Magic and Mystery School called Handling Humans, because what mentalism boils down to, Max said,
sure.
is really managing the people that you're working with, because you're reading minds, you're interacting with people, and it's a lot about the stage management. How do the people stand? How do you stand on stage? How do you relate to the people on stage and the audience? How do you move the people from the audience onto the stage and off the stage? We work on all of these things, as well as scripting, choreography, costuming, and of course, technique.
Now, this is, of course, specifically for mentalists, and this is just one time a year? Do you have this, obviously, in conjunction with the Mindvention?
We have this. We do private coaching. We do Skype classes. We do other types of classes online every week, as a matter of fact. And as a matter of fact, the month of November is Mentalism Month at our online school that you can see at mcbridemagic.tv. We run a month of mentalism on the live stream there that you can see for free 24 hours a day. But we run different courses at different types of the year, depending on this convention is a very good place because people don't have to do 2 trips into Las Vegas. They can plan their really immersive mental vacation around Mindvention and the Master Class for Mentalism. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then, so it's just this one time of the year.
Correct.
And then, as far as being here at the McBride Mansion, but the rest of the year you have your Master Class that...
And we have all different subjects. We have one of our most popular courses that we're giving is Magic for Speakers and Presenters, which is good for anyone that is doing public speaking or corporate talks.
Who's in that? Who works with you on that?
Larry Haas works with that. We have different public speakers depending on which year that you come. We have different people that are experts in motivational speaking showing up to that. And, of course, Eugene Berger works on the scripting as well. We have not only the Speakers and Presenters Master Class, but we also do a street magic camp in the fall where people come and they study with some of the best in the world. It's a great time of year because many street performers and street entertainers are coming into Las Vegas because the weather is perfect in October to do this. And they come in and we give them the seminar during the day, and then we actually take them up to the Las Vegas Strip where they see the pros perform.
Right.
And then they get a chance to perform for feedback, and then we give them feedback and video them and everything.
And just to make clear, would you define a street magician as opposed to street magic that you see like on the DVDs and
street
Cosmo kind of stuff?
Yeah. Street magician is more somebody like Mario Morris from the School of Busking or Gazza that has to draw a big audience. It's busking as opposed to camera magic, which I think the difference is. One is shot for the home viewer, and the other one is we teach how people can make a living doing what they love anywhere in the world, anytime they want it, indoors and out.
And so the other master class, I assume you have one for close-up as well as for stage and illusion?
We have the 7-day master classes, which we cover close-up, parlor, and stage magic. We've had specialty master classes on illusion with special guest entertainers. I do a special manipulation focus session, which is just days of focusing on manipulation,
yeah,
on stand-up parlor and stage magic with balls, coins, thimbles, silks, ropes, and that sort of material, and putting people's acts together for them.
Well, with all of those classes going on, and you travel so much, I mean, when do you get an opportunity really to get out and perform? I mean, I know you have the Wonderland. We'll talk about that in a minute. But as far as you know, your own personal life, it sounds like you just got a lot of balls in the air here.
Yeah, I'm traveling to China a lot with my illusion show. But interestingly enough, one of the things that gets me back to Vegas and back home for a couple of weeks are the classes.
Class. Okay, because
right,
you know you got to get back.
It's a way to anchor myself and to work half the year in Vegas building the school.
Refocus.
We're going to be, you know, 25 years old. We've been doing the Mystery School for 25, quarter of a century.
Now I'm starting to feel old.
Yep.
You still look like you're only 35.
Right.
You know?
Well, thank you very much. We started very young. But I'm the same age, Eugene was when we did the first Mystery School.
Oh, no, that's
so
funny.
Yeah,
that's
isn't funny. That funny?
Well, so
he was the old guy. Now I guess I'm the old guy, but without the beard.
So so who's the young guy?
Who's the young guy? Larry Haas.
I guess Larry
is now the new young guy.
The new guy.
But also it works out very well because the third Thursday of every month I hold Wonderground, which is one of the longer running magic shows in Las Vegas now. It's been running
for six, seven years. Okay.
We've been now going into our sixth year at our new location,
which is
Olive Mediterranean on Sunset. You can get information, go to VegasWonderground.com. And it's an interesting project because we do a new show every month. With completely different cast.
I was going to say different artists that you have coming in now. These people who are locals. I mean, you got hundreds
well,
of guys.
Well, this week we have Mickey O'Connor, who's Franz Harari's opening act at his giant stadium shows.
Yeah.
Mickey O'Connor is a juggler vaudevillian, very funny guy. We have Jonathan Pendragon doing some new pieces.
He's going to do some mentalism?
He might very well do some mentalism. He actually
he
does some interesting mentalism. He's going to be doing some new stage pieces. We have Joe Atmore is going to be doing some of his material from the Dunninger show.
Yeah.
And so the show changes, you know, if you come a different month, you might see Dan Sperry there, you might see Rudy Kobe there, you might see Xavier Mortimer, who's the star of the Michael Jackson show.
No,
that's correct.
He was at Magic Live. That was such a big hit the last night. Yeah.
And so we always have guest artists. You never know who's going to be dropping in. Any given night in the audience is amazing. Jonathan, Chris Angel, Lance Burton, Matt King, Kevin James. We don't really advertise. Teller comes down. Penn hasn't been down there, but Teller comes. Johnny Thompson comes.
Yeah.
So it's like a who's who of magic, and that's just who's watching the show.
Yeah. And so is it actually a theater, or when you say it's a Wonderground?
The Wonderground is a concept, and we move it to different venues depending on the year. But this is held at a wonderful Middle Eastern restaurant, which all couches and tents
belly dancers and fire eaters
and body painters and strolling magic. And we have three different shows during the evening at 8 o'clock. There's a stand-up comedy variety show that lasts about an hour. Then at 9 o'clock, there's a parlor show. Where people like Paul V. Hill or Johnny Thompson or even Howard Hamburg will come in and do parlor magic. And then we have a 10 o'clock stage extravaganza, which is more for like the Rudy Kobe and Dan Sperry, you know, sort of, you know, crazy wild stuff.
Is that still all one ticket price or do you pay
$10 for everything?
For everything, for the whole night.
For the whole night.
Wow, that is a good
deal. We don't really do it for the money. We like to be able to filter out people that are looking to, you know, crash the gate.
Yeah.
And we found that's really good. But we really do it to support the magic community, to have new things for the magic community that's here in Vegas to look at, to see, to experience. And also it's a party for us to come together every month instead of once when there's a magic convention in town.
Right. So it's not really a banquet room per se, is it then?
No,
necessarily?
It's a beautiful, beautiful restaurant. We put in a stage. We put in a stage. We put in curtains. We put in all kinds of stuff. It's a really great venue.
That sounds wonderful. Well, Jeff, thanks very much for your time. I know you come here every year, and so it's always good to see you.
I love it here, and Eugene loves it here, and of course the master Ross Johnson is going to be up next, so I'm going to go take a seat.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for spreading the word.
You bet, we will do that. As Jeff McBride for the Magic Orb, Scotty out. Well, we just finished the last evening show, and so the convention is officially over. I think the dealers probably are even closed over there. That's why they're closing as we speak, kind of a thing. So they already had their chance to buy whatever. So I'm here with Andrew Goldenhirsch. Hey, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, doing great.
And so, again, this is for the Magic Word podcast. And so So you can download this and listen to yourself, and you'll think, man, why did I say that? I can't believe I said that.
Because there's nothing that people like more than hearing the sound of their own voice.
Isn't that true? I think I sound horrible, you know. People say, no, you have a good voice. No, I don't.
Especially after a few days of a convention.
That's
right. That's sleep-deprived, kind of raw.
That's kind of the way that I feel. After a couple of cigars.
Oh, my gosh. They can smoke in bars here. I forgot.
It's everywhere you smoke over here,
exactly,
obviously. You know, I'm in having dinner.
It's worse than L.A. air. Worse than L.A. air.
That's smog. That's right.
Yeah.
What'd you think about this evening's show?
Oh, I really enjoyed it.
Wasn't that fun?
Really enjoyed it.
That Cashada, I tell her, Cashada just kills me, you know.
Absolutely.
Very, very funny.
Keep it pronoun neutral.
Neutral pronoun. It was interesting.
No, that was just, it was wonderful.
I think with John Riggs, again, we haven't really seen him, you know, here in the past, so it's kind of cool to see his performance.
And, my gosh, a lot of inside baseball going on.
Yeah, wasn't it?
I laughed out loud many, many times.
He had a lot of, that's true. And then followed by Bob Cassidy, of course, who was our guest of honor, and then closing out with Doc Hilford. A well-rounded
both
show.
Just genius. Yeah.
And you were here for the whole convention, and so you were just kind of hanging out. I mean, you're something who is very well known in the field of mentalism, and not as an underground, maybe.
I wouldn't say in the field of mentalism. I don't really do mentalism. I'm just kind of fascinated by mentalism.
Well, but you helped Jason. My mind went blank.
Although that was
Jason Alexander. And that was a mentalism kind of thing.
Wouldn't have
won the award without your inspiration and production.
He beat me for that award, in fact.
ultimately, didn't it?
There you go. But you know what? Magic is magic, and there are, you know, many styles and many different types. Deep down, we're looking for that moment of astonishment.
That's true.
Lots of ways to get there.
I just saw Rob Zabrecki for the first time this summer.
Wonderful
performer. And what an off-the-wall guy. It's like I'm one of his big fans now.
Yeah.
And it's so different. And you talk about there being, you know, many rooms and all that. And the same thing, you know, with...
And when it's a room that is so individual like that.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
And everybody's
nothing like it.
Making their own way, you know, in that.
Yeah.
We all
be able to do
Derek
that.
Hughes and Delgadio and all the guys who are doing a bunch of different stuff and taking different directions and finding success in the commercial market, I think, which is kind of cool then, too.
Yeah.
So what are you working on as far as you doing anything consulting with anybody or kind of traveling? Or
any consult? I've been mostly traveling lately.
Have you?
I'm very thankful to have a little at the end of this month, I'll have a little bit of time at home, which is
on your
been
own.
Very nice.
Now, traveling
like
just across the U.S. or around the world?
It's been primarily...
In the U.S.?
No, it's been primarily world stuff lately.
Okay.
I was on a ship in the Mediterranean last month. And
is that right?
Spent a lot of time in Japan this year, 3 months.
Do you speak Japanese?
I know enough to be funny. So
okay, well, that's what's important.
Been spending a lot of time there.
However, I could be funny by just saying something. I have no idea what they're saying. That guy is an idiot. He can't speak. That's funny. But so you could actually speak a few things that are comical, I guess.
It's kind of fun to ride that line. I'll tell you honestly. Yeah. I established very quickly that I don't speak the language, which means then when I do come out with something that's sort of out of left field or a rather obscure cultural reference that there's no way I could know, it's very funny to them.
Yeah.
So
plus what
they really, okay.
I was going to say, what type of things are you doing, you know, then over there?
It's been close-up, stand-up stuff. I did a long run for several years at a theme park in the south of Japan. It's called House Ten Bosch. It's a Dutch theme park.
In Japan.
Exactly.
And an American working there.
People don't realize. I know. Well, it's a funny thing. A long time ago, when Japan finally opened its borders to trade, the Dutch were actually the first settlers. I didn't know this until had I not been working this park. But it's
when
a classic.
Would that have been? How long was that? Like 1500s or something?
I quoted a year to somebody, and I think it's dead wrong. But it's
whatever you say, Max will be listening to this.
You're right, and I will be corrected. So you know what? I'm not going to commit to anything. Just know it's centuries ago.
A long time ago.
a long time ago.
So it's not like a Disney park.
No, very different. It's got, you know, windmills, and it's just very Dutch themed. There's a kind of Hello Kitty-looking tulip that kind of dances around. So the cutest characters you've ever seen. Way out-cutes Disney, I've got to admit.
Yeah, and wooden shoes and all the...
gigantic wooden shoes. I have a wonderful photo of Shutogawa and Danny Cole inside of two gigantic life-size... Yeah.
Look like boats?
Yes. Kind of
basically.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A little canoe race.
Yep. Yeah. And so you live in L.A.
I live in L.A.
And but that's kind of a base, I guess, for you since you've been traveling, you know, then a lot. So you got a lot of things then this next year also that you're planning on or working on?
Yeah,
any,
Okay. A few things in the hopper,
so
irons in the fire. I know I'm heading back to Japan in May for a small tour.
For a few a few weeks?
It's going to be, about... going through a few cities. I'll share the details with you on that one
offline
at a further time.
Okay.
Right. But going to visit about a dozen cities over the course of a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then just see what else I'm going to do.
I don't see many conventions. You know, I attend a lot of magic conventions, but you're not at a lot, or at least we're traveling in different circles from some conventions.
Yeah,
do you find that you don't?
Maybe that.
Or do you travel to go to conventions?
I used to go to a lot more of them. I certainly went to a lot more of them in Vegas. I was just having this conversation with somebody, in fact, before we started talking, that I miss all those Vegas conventions. We do have Magic Live that happens every few years,
right.
And it's one of the best conventions I've ever attended.
Twice. Sorry, I think earlier this year.
I think that's right.
That's right. But among the 1,600 other people.
But I miss those annuals. There used to be several, and now there are none. And
right.
I hope somebody comes in to fill that gap.
Yeah, because Danny and Robert used to have the Invitational.
Oh, VMI. It was a wonderful thing.
Attended that. Did you go to that?
I used to go to many of those. I had the great fortune of working the final one.
Oh.
And, then it disappeared, as conventions do.
Do you like card work as far as close-up? What is your favorite kind of close-up work to do? You consider yourself a finger flinker.
Do I consider myself? I don't necessarily consider myself a finger flinger.
Okay.
It's something I enjoy. I don't know. I like doing things that intrigue me in some ways.
Okay.
So I enjoy cards. I enjoy coins.
It's just the close-up experience overall, different kinds of things.
I don't know. You know what? There's a lot of people doing cards and coins. And I'm intrigued by the things that are out of the box.
Other things. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I can think of a lot of things
It's
with
funny.
This,
I went kind of obscure for a second. I realized. Yeah. So you probably haven't seen me do much.
I haven't seen you do a lot of close-up.
All right. So, I am in awe because I don't want to ruin any surprises.
Okay.
But, I like the things that fit people.
Okay.
Close-up is a unique, very intimate environment. And
sure.
I think people have an opportunity to share their personalities very quickly because you're speaking to a small group. You know, a lot of these performance environments happen at parties. And you know what? When you walk up to a group at a party and you're not performing magic, often if you're focused and being open with people, you do get to know each other within about 5 minutes.
Right.
So why shouldn't it happen when we're performing magic? So, I guess I've always been, on the lookout for those few things that really resonate with my...
Within you.
Your
inner being.
The stuff that makes me want to do magic.
What do you like in the Magic Castle, as far as which room? What is your favorite? I mean, you like the close-up part or stage?
I go back and forth. I love the close-up gallery because there's nothing like it, because they're
against
just...
so close, right there.
You're right there, but it's such a sort of formal atmosphere.
Yeah.
There's something about the Magic Castle and everyone being in suits and, it's a formal environment, so you get an opportunity to do sort of... dare I say, quote unquote, theatrical close-up.
Yeah.
But it's also nice. There's a newer theater. It's called the Peller Theater.
Yeah,
And I really enjoy that. That is probably my favorite room there because they have full sound, full lighting, but it's, a very intimate space. It's even more intimate than the parlor.
Mm-hmm. It's really a parlor, right?
Yeah,
the old
style. Exactly. Yeah. But you're able to do, full stage things.
Sure.
Maybe.
Sure. Well, I'm going to wrap up, but I want to say, I was going to talk about the convention over here one more time, I guess, the Mindvention, that this is the 10th one. How many of these have you attended?
I'm not sure. I've been to, maybe three or so
over
the years.
They always have a good feel, and I really enjoy
it. Yeah, it's just, it's a different group of people.
Yeah.
These aren't the same people that you see at all these. And yeah, I mean, I don't tend to do a lot of mentalism, but this always gets me inspired. It's just, it's a different way of thinking about the magical moment.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good way of putting it. And so let me wrap up by just saying, name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question to you is, what is your magic word? And I don't mean necessarily like hocus pocus or abracadabra, but, you know, what is it that is important to you? What is your chi, you know, your life force? What is important? Yeah, what's...
Wow, that's
what's
deep.
Important to you?
<That's deep. laughs>
It could be a phrase, could be
in
a word.
One word.
Or a phrase, or a couple of words, or something that... what do you live by?
You know what? Appreciation of the moment.
That's a really good one. Yeah. The present, I guess. Appreciation, but appreciate where we are right now.
Yeah.
Well,
it's that moment where the brain kind of goes, this is an unbelievable moment I'm experiencing.
And that's what
right
magic
now.
Is, I guess, really.
It can provide that.
Because when it pops, it's like, wow, this is amazing right now. And I'll talk about it later.
Exactly.
And I wasn't expecting that in the future. So that's
but
why.
This is one that I will remember in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, let me say, I appreciate the moment you've given us. Thank you very much for
being
on The Magic Word. And there was Andrew Goldhirsch. And so for The Magic Word, this is Scotty out. Well, and since the convention's over, it's always good to spend a little bit of time then with the organizer, in which he's going to be, and I say organizer because I don't have Robert here, but I do have Danny Archer. Hi there, Danny.
Hi. Hi, Scott.
And so we started off on the first day and with some expectations, and do you feel like all of that was met and beyond, or what?
You know, you try to put on the best convention you can, and I think we put on the best convention we could.
Well, that's kind of a left-handed compliment to yourself, you know.
No. Everybody performed above and beyond a call of duty, and then, you know, we had to have a fill-in show, and I had a couple of guys come out of the audience and just knock one out of the park. So, we're very happy. Very happy.
Yeah, with Chad and Patrick and Bill
Abbott and Joe Atmore.
And all those guys that kind of came out, and so I'm sure they weren't expecting to perform, but boy, they did admirably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think was the highlight for you? Now, I know you're running in different directions.
It's like asking me to name what's my
favorite baby.
I sit it in the audience. I'm a big Doc Hilfer fan.
Yeah.
And so anytime I get to see Doc Hilfer, that's absolutely great. And Bob Cassidy to watch the legend in action.
Sure.
You can't go wrong there. I was happy with all our performers.
Yeah. And so we are going to be having the convention at a different date next year. So go ahead. Why don't you give us a preview?
It was 11, 12, 13 or 12, 13. Yeah, 11, 12, 13, I believe.
That is.
And we're going to have our guest of honor.
That's today. Today is 11, 12, 13.
Oh, really? Oh, this is, I'm sorry, October.
Yeah, in October, the 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Yes.
Okay.
11th, 12th, 13th
of
October.
As opposed to today being November 12th, 2013, 11th, 12th, 13th.
Oh, I wasn't
that's today.
I wasn't even
ooh,
aware
isn't that
of
kind
that.
Of cool?
Yeah. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. Yeah, October 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Yeah. Well, I believe it's going to be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, like we always do the weekend.
Yeah.
And our we don't do a guest of honor every year. We really don't, but we're doing a guest of honor next year, and it's going to be the always amazing Richard Osterlund.
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember him being here a few years ago. He doesn't come every year either. So
No. We had him here, I think, two or 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2010 or something.
Yeah.
I think that was about right, somewhere in there, 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. That may have been the year, I think, that there was a lifetime achievement given to Larry Becker.
Yeah, we gave one to Larry Becker. And I'm trying to think if we... And that might have been it.
That's maybe, it. That's
I think
all
it's
I can
Larry
think of.
And Bob,
yeah.
At this point, and Richard, and there will be more. I have one or two other people, I think, but that are both worthy of the type of award,
I think the roast was certainly appropriate and perfect, for Bob Cassidy. It may not be for everybody in every guest of honor.
Definitely
but
not.
Perfect for...
I doubt you will see another roast come down the pike, because you're right. You need the right guy.
Yeah.
Bob was the right guy to do the roast. And having, the talent that we had here in town that were willing to lend a hand with that was absolutely incredible, including, Cachetta. That was another highlight.
Yeah.
Cachetta's performance. And
that's going to be something people remember for years.
Yes.
Well, I can't get that image out of my eyes.
Exactly. And then the talk the next day was very illuminating and informative.
Sure, absolutely.
About, Scott and his career. So, we were absolutely thrilled. The panel discussions were all really strong. Every event was...
you're right. The panel discussions carried on after the panel discussion is over. And that was unlike a lot of conventions I attend, and there will be other panel discussions. Like, that's interesting. And then they'll go to lunch, and they'll be talking about, you know, another lecture or whatever. But I found, for an example, the first one we were talking about magic and mentalism, mm-hmm. and should it be included. That seemed to be kind of a common thread, mm-hmm. you know, that was discussed for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal. I just think that some of the things that people were talking about, and they had certain favorites. Oh, I love Doc Kilford's lecture. I really liked, you know, this guy, or, you know, lecturer. John Riggs, it was great, you know, because John, you know, doesn't ever show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah, to have yeah. John Riggs, this was his first lecture.
Yeah.
His first, you know, convention appearance. Mm-hmm. So that was a coup, and his stage performance.
Yeah.
Puppet fell out. I was, yeah, it was very entertaining.
Very funny. You know, it was kind of like what Andrew Goldenhurst was just saying, you know, it was kind of, there's a lot of inside baseball, a lot of inside jokes.
Oh, yeah, he was, definitely. Well, the whole weekend is sort of like that.
Sure.
There's a lot of, you know, inside type of humor from people in the know.
Right.
And that really adds to it, you know, because especially the guys, we're all nudging each other, like, yeah, we're getting that. And the laymen are not getting all the jokes that we're
right.
getting.
Right. Well, Danny, you and Robert did a great job. I'm going to thank him a little bit later.
Have okay.
Cigar and a martini downstairs or something.
All right. Thanks, my man. Thanks
you guys
for coming.
Done a great job. We appreciate it. That was Danny Archer, and this has been the Mindvention 2013, the 10th. And so it looks like that it's now it's been given wings, and it looks like it's going to make it. Definitely. Congratulations. And so for now, Scotty out. And so now we have walked out in the lobby and happened to run into John Riggs. We were just, Danny Archer and I were just talking about him and how exciting it was to see him perform his first lecture and show and convention, and here he is. John Riggs, hello.
Well, hello, Scott.
So glad to grab you, and that I see you got your stuff already packed and you're heading to the room. So if you got just a minute, I just wanted to thank you,
oh,
you know,
thank
for
you.
Coming.
Well, thanks.
From Knoxville, is
Knoxville,
that right?
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Where
tell by the accent.
Well, snake handling started, and where we just recently made the news because of the 50 snakes that were recently...
What was that?
Well, you know, snake handling started in Greenback, Tennessee, just outside of Knoxville.
Yeah.
And even though the atomic bomb, Oppenheimer and Wilson, cracked the atom in Oak Ridge right outside of Knoxville, then they drove to Los Alamos to detonate it, we're mostly known for snake handling. We made national news recently because this chap who apparently was on... some National Geographic show. He had a regular series where they handled snakes in church.
Okay.
They apparently ASPCA came in and confiscated all of his snakes and arrested him. And that made national news, but not the fact that we were the cutting-edge scientific center of the world.
Yeah, something that actually contributed to the well-being of mankind. And
oh, yeah, so those barefoot hillbillies just sit down there handling snakes.
And, you know. Yeah, continue to...
Not to mention
for that myth.
The home place of mentalism's finest flower, me.
There you go. And you've lived there all of your life, have you?
I have. I lived in Indiana for about 8.5 years,
yeah.
And I just recently moved back... about 9 months ago, I moved back to Knoxville.
You're well known for a lot of fantastic things that you've invented and made over the years. And you were saying something about, I'm kind of tired of making stuff. You know, here's some ideas you can kind of make on your own. Have you still got products and things that you are
yes,
manufacturing?
I have a line. 19 years ago, I invented the Brown Hornet, which was the prototype clipboard.
Right.
It was based on the Brown Hornet principle, which uses the inverse square law of magnetics. And I wanted a clipboard. I got tired of breaking my toilet flushing the stuff I was buying. So I'm a retired mechanical engineer, so I just put my mind to the problem of making a clipboard that works, first of all, always works, looks like a real clipboard, and you can instantly reset it and do all these various things. And I came up with a very good solution. And over the past 19 years, I've been refining it. Then I made branches off using the same technology of notepads, and I put it in paperback books and portfolios and all sorts of other things. So right now I have, I think, something like 35 or 40 variations of it. And it just occurred to me I need to cut back the product line just a little bit. And I make specialized products, personalized things. People send me all kinds of stuff to convert.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. I've converted also DVD cases and hotel notepads and post-it note containers and little leather things. And people send me all kinds of stuff to personalize and to customize. I got some customization jobs at home sitting on my workbench. I have to go back, you know, and do very fast.
Wow.
So I can put an impression device in just about anything, and using the Brown Hornet principle. And some people have tried to knock this off, but then, since they don't understand the physics behind it, they don't know how to make it correctly, they don't, it doesn't work as well.
Right.
So I'm very proud of these. And everything I make is handmade and custom crafted and hand polished and hand finished. They take a little while to make, and sometimes you have to wait a couple of months to get them, but I think the wait is worth it.
And so people who want to contact you, how do they do that?
Well, you have to, I don't ever sell these to dealers, and I never will. You have to come to me, and it's an underground thing. And you just have to email me. I don't sell them to just anybody, because you have to have some experience in mentalism and audience management. I don't want beginners and kids to have it, because you can't use them correctly. But you have to just drop me an email.
To what's your email address?
Oh, you can do it at johnriggs@comcast.net. And I'll send you a link to my secret website where my products are. I have books and DVDs as well. I think right now I have 34 DVDs on mentalism. And
wow.
I compiled all my writings. I've been writing mentalism books since 92, and I compiled them all into two volumes. And the word count on it when I compiled them all was something like 250,000 words, quarter of a million words on mentalism I've written. And so I compiled those recently. People still buy the separate books. I don't know why, because the two-volume set will save you some money.
Got them all together, there.
And I annotated them and put forewords and footnotes and extra material and all sorts of stuff in it. So if you contact me at that address...
JohnRiggs@comcast.net.
Yep. And
that's two G's, by the way.
Yep. JohnRiggs. So the idea is that I'd like you to have some experience in audience management and mentalism to use these, because they're tools for people who are familiar with mentalism and how to use it. I really can't train you in the use of these. And I have some tutorials on DVD, but you pretty much have to know how to use these things. And I'd like for that. I don't have... introduction. People say, well, I'm new to mentalism and I've never used impression devices. These are not for you.
Yeah,
these are after you've learned how to do this stuff for a while. And I says that on my website. You know, these are not for you if you've never done this before. But everybody hears about them, how good they are, and they go, oh, I got to have these things. Well, okay, but you're probably going to tear them up. And that's what happens to a lot of people. They tear them up. And
then they got to have another one made
they want me to fix them. And I said, okay, but you know,
it'll cost you again.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, I was talking with Doc Ilford earlier on a podcast about you and one of the books. Wasn't The God Complex? We were trying to think of
The Messiah Process.
Messiah Process.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Yes, that was a book I put together when I was very young. At a very young age, I was fascinated with the Southern evangelists who went around in tent revivals and how they built cult-like followings. And from there, I went to all sorts of mind control cult meetings, and I studied it very intently with the intent of understanding how you make people believe, the mindset of the believer. And I became very expert on this, and I wrote The Messiah Process, the most dangerous book I ever wrote. And I'm not even sure why I wrote it, but I published it, and I started getting these very funny phone calls where people would say, well, yes, I understand you've written a book on cult mentality. Well, yes. Could I get a copy of this document? Well, sure. Who are you? Well, you can send it to Andrew.
Post office box.
At a post office box, And, well, who do I send it to? Andrew at this post office box. And will you accept a postal money order? Well, yes. And in the middle of the night, I'd get these calls at 3 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah, and so... I was in Akron, Ohio, at this. Well, what's your last name, Andrew? Do you need to know that?
It's
well,
not necessary.
Not necessary. And then I got a fellow who said that Scientologists were bombing his mailbox and stuff, and if I'd send him a copy, because he's fighting the Scientologists and stuff. And then, of course, David Blaine was influenced by The Messiah Process, and it was a very influential book. I have notes from Messiah Process too, but I've never released it because it's crazy stuff.
Were you considered like as a cult expert, so people were contacting you then also?
After Messiah
Process. The police department?
No, it wasn't like that, but some people who were involved in deprogramming and who were anti-Scientologists, they were deprogramming that. Some people like that were contacting me about it. And I said, this is not that kind of book, really. I said, this is just to understand the mindset of people who believe, why they believe, and how this can be used in psychic entertainment in a benign fashion to create a stronger effect.
Mm-hmm.
I edited it later on to take out some of the stronger stuff that could actually be misused.
Okay.
And then I put in Messiah Process 2, I had things like bleeding tears, producing images of sacred.
So you had effects that you taught in there that people could create a cult.
There were miracle effects.
Yeah.
Bleeding
yeah.
out of your side, blood oozing and gushing from the palms of your hand, out of your hair, bleeding tears, producing images of icons and bruises on your hands, lifting curses in such a manner that people could see it. You'd put your hands on people and pull your hands back and smoke would appear.
Wow. Serious stuff.
Yeah, serious. And you'd put your hands on people and pull it back and drops of blood would appear on their skin as you remove the curses.
Yeah.
Stuff that you could... Oh, yeah, when you're doing a spiritual reading on someone and you're talking to their dead relatives, all of a sudden the smell of rotten eggs would appear and you would say, oh God, no, look, don't move, and you would start chanting in Latin and you said, and then the smell of roses would fill the room. Yeah, because a negative entity, a demon, tried to, you say, negative entities from the lower chakra realms are trying to break through. But I called in the protection of the archangel Gabriel to come in and bring that out. And they had physical evidence of this, that a hell being came in smelling of brimstone, you know, and attempted to disrupt the proceedings. And you banish them. And so, that, you know, they go back and tell, this is something, you know, you feel like John Edwards stuff can't do.
Yeah,
they go, I want to get a reading with this guy to talk to my dead aunt. And, you know, a demon appeared, and this guy banished him. He ran him off. Yeah, things like this. And I said, I don't need to be selling this, you know, to guys who are doing mental epic and the centered hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Or guys with hippity-hop rabbits or something.
Yeah, you know, they're doing... I don't need to be... You know, they'll be going to bars trying to pick up women and go, yeah, baby, I can conjure demons. Come over to my... Yeah, you know, Chris Angel getting it or something. Yeah, I don't need people like this, you know.
So did you pull the books or...
Messiah Process 2 has never been published. I have the notes for it. I have it outlined. I've never published it. I have it. Now, I was thinking about putting out a DVD called Shaman, but I said, no, I'm not going to release this material. And, oh, another one was a spontaneous nosebleed. As you're concentrating, your nose starts to bleed.
Yeah.
That was from Stephen King's The Dead Zone. Every time Johnny Smith, you know, did something, I thought, I want to do that. So I figured out ways to make it happen because wrestlers have this trick of doing that. You know, they have a blood squib, and it's the same thing like spewing milk out of your nose. You inhale it and then hock it out of your nose. But it's a blood squib, and it's an unpleasant sensation, but you can do that and make your nose gush blood, or either a trickle or a gush. So I worked out all these methods for creating these bizarre effects, and, you know, you tear your shirt open, and you're oozing blood from your chest, and letters, you know, some name spell, and all these exorcist...
Spell the name in blood, wow.
Oh, yeah, exorcist effects, and...
But that's all was in part two that you have not published.
Yeah, I've not published these things because, I said, if these fall into the... unscrupulous hands or more unscrupulous hands than mine, it could cause damage. And I know when and when not to, you know, I don't have a power trip. I'm not looking to set myself up as a cult leader. I really don't. And, you know, I'm happy to be a performer in a theatrical environment, and I can do these things in a theatrical environment and create a strong effect and then send people back home, you know, to their reality.
Well, you do a lot of readings, and I was going to ask about that, you know, being in Knoxville area and, you know, Bible Belt and which... That...
Well, it's a notch on the Bible Belt.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And within that area, I would think that there would be some... difficulty trying to...
Well, no, because anytime you have a strong conservative religious element, you got a counter reaction to it, and that counter reaction is by market. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When I did psychic fairs, we used to go to Chattanooga. Chattanooga actually had a law. There was fortune telling for fun or profit. You couldn't even do it in your house. Fun or profit. It was illegal. A stone's throw from there was Eastridge, where there wasn't such a law. So literally across the street, illegal. Eastridge was legal. So every weekend... the very religious fundamentalists would come over and protest. The organizer of the psychic fair would call the media and say, hey, those godless devil worshipers are out here. You should come and cover this. They're protesting. So the media would come out, and we get all this free publicity. Well, then after that, we got the publicity. He called the police and say, hey, they're disrupting our event. And the police would come and run them off. He was very smart. And a lot of times they would come in... you know, and tell us about Jesus and stuff. And I kept, you know what a Houdini Bible is?
I do.
Yeah, I kept one on the table. You know, Al Mann made one, and I kept one on the table. And they'd, oh, you have the writ of the Holy Spirit. And I'd say, well, yes, yes, I'm a God-fearing man. And I say, you know what bibliomancy is? And some of them did. And I said, why don't you just open it to a page and look at the bottom verse? And, you know, the bottom verse of the one Al Mann put was, and they shall lick the dust on their belly like a serpent. And and I said, because, you know, this will give me a little prophecy for you, you know, words of encouragement about how your mission is going to go. So, God favors you, will give you some encouragement, and God will speak to you through this bibliomancy and tell me how your crusade against evil is going to go. And it will say, you know, and they shall lick the dust of the earth like a serpent. And so that could be interpreted in a number of ways. Will their enemies lick the dust, or will they lick the dust?
Yeah.
So it could go either way. And a lot of times they just love that, and I became their friend, because there's really nothing in the Bible against being a soothsayer or a seer. Necromancy is raising the dead.
Right.
And so it can go either way. If you're a psychic, you can be accepted or rejected depending on the packaging you put it in. You can be a soothsayer, you can be a seer, as long as you're not a necromancer, or a sorcerer. And so many Christians would come to one of my shows or my public events, and they say, at first I thought you were doing the devil's work, but I know now, and I'm serious, Scott, I would hear this, but I know now that, God has blessed you with this wonderful gift, and it's for you to help people, and I want to pray for your ministry.
That you have the gift.
Yeah, God has given you the gift of prophecy. And
well, I always interpreted that in the Bible, in which that they were saying that you shouldn't be a seer or whatever else, or psychic, only because if you were drawing people away from the belief, true belief of God.
Well, it also says the greatest gift is the gift of prophecy. And your sons and daughters will prophesy. So there's...
It is one of the gifts, yeah. Gifts of prophecy and gifts of tongues, et cetera, mm-hmm. interpreting it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's it depends on the intention of the person. Raising the dead is... I don't truck with raising the dead. I don't do that. And, sorcerer, the word sorcerer means...
Well, a guy down the street here in Las Vegas did that on TV.
Oh, yeah. Well, he needs to raise his own career. That's the thing, is raise the corpse of his own career. But, the word sorcerer means drawer of circles, and the idea of drawing the circles was to raise the dead. The sorcerer would draw the circles to evoke demons and raise the dead. And, that's pretty dark stuff, and I don't have anything to do with demons or raising the dead.
Right.
And I don't know if you saw the examples of readings I did today.
I did.
In my lecture.
And
you saw that the nature of those were...
Like the one thing that you had that was kind of an equivoque, basically, but I like the idea where that the items that you were separating, that when they were
pushed away,
you gave a negative reading saying... This is
what you pushed out of away from you. These are the things you've pushed away from you. These are what you're walking away from. Yes, you honor the discards. And, I said, you'll notice most of what you pushed away were items of gambling and risk-taking, non-spiritual items, material of the earth. So you're walking away from these, taking risks, the coffin nail, things like that. So now's not a good time to take chances, and you're moving toward the more spiritual. So these are these...
So each time that they start separating again, that you're just not saying, okay, we're done with those.
Yeah,
we're just going to get rid of them. You actually draw attention to those. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, the idea of using the equivoque not as a way to eliminate, but as to separate the piles into aspects of a reading. If I may say so, that's the greatest idea I've ever had.
That's a great idea.
It was a stroke of genius. If I may say so,
word out of my mouth. I was going to say that was genius.
Yeah, it wasn't. I'm not.
Well, I like the idea also of the Scrabble pieces. Mm-hmm. Of essentially being a Ouija board.
A Ouija board. Yeah, yeah.
But you kind of put those around in a circle, and then use the billet. That was just brilliant.
Yeah, it's the planchette. Yeah, and it allows you to get the information too.
Sure.
Yeah, it was not a bad idea. The
more than not a bad idea. It was brilliant.
Oh, well, thank you, thank you. And it also can be very affirming to do things like that. And I know there's there are people who have trouble. Banachek and I've had discussions about this many years. Banachek and I go way back. We've had many discussions on this. Banachek and I respect each other quite a bit, and we've had lots of discussions on that. And it just depends on how you see people and how you think people accept or interpret this. But, shamanism goes back thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, shamans may or may not have used trickery to do the things. It doesn't matter. But it's a religious or cultural ritual that has a purpose and a healing purpose. And part of the religious or cultural ritual may or may not involve what we call chicanery, because it produces a psychological effect in the person who witnesses it. And some of what I do involves that subterfuge, but a lot of it does not. You know, when I do readings, I'm doing readings. You know, those are readings.
Right.
And I don't use Forer statements, and I don't use Barnum statements, and I don't use what has come to be known as cold reading. But, you know, cold reading, as it was originally defined, was an umbrella term that covered a lot of things, the psychological subterfuges, but it also included telepathy and clairvoyance, retrocognition, just any way you could tell someone things about themselves without doing previous research on them. You know,
yeah.
If you look at the original discussion on it that Ray Hyman wrote up, the definition of cold reading was this entire umbrella term of just any way you knew stuff about somebody without doing previous research on them, including clairvoyance, retrocognition, telepathy, clairaudience, and all these other things. They were included in cold reading, but the modern rationalist skeptical movement has just said cold reading is when you are using Forer statements and observing reactions and things like that. Well, those are included also, but this other field of psi was also included in cold reading, and you know, using intuition and using things like this. So, you know, when I'm doing readings, I'm doing readings. I'm not, you know, calculating and observing and doing this. Maybe on some instinctive level, but I'm doing a freewheeling stream of consciousness. I go into a semi-trance state. You know, like when I was doing the reading today with a gentleman, and this image of the child in the woods, that was very personal, and it meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knew exactly what I was talking. I don't know if anybody else did, but, you know, this idea.
Yeah, when you said that, and he was saying, yeah, and I kind of got the feeling that you were touching him.
It moved him, yeah, because I saw this image, and I said, you know, you're either going to have to break the chain between you and the child or go back and bring the child out of the woods. That meant a great deal to him.
So is that something that's a cold reading thing? Did you just happen to pull out, or did you just happen to... Did you have an intuition that you felt something?
It was a true insight, and I do that a lot. If you've been doing readings as long as I have, you get these insights.
You know, Banachek had told me about that before, that when people have done this for a long enough time, I mean, it's like anything else, you become very good at it, and there are some things, perhaps, you can develop.
Well, it's like if you do...
exercise a muscle.
Basically. Yeah, if you do Hellstromism, you know, the contact mind reading.
Muscle reading,
There are times, as soon as the person just touches you, you go, oh, I know it's behind that book on the third shelf. You just know it, but you don't know how. And I know Banachek does CMR, and he may have experienced this as well. But, you know, you say, take my wrist, and you take the wrist, and you go, oh, I know exactly. It's like an instant transference of knowledge, and you don't know how or why. It's like there's a feeling where you just push. It's like a push. And when you think about it later, you go, well, why isn't that mind reading? Why is that not mind reading? And there are times, too, when you're not even touching them. It's rare, but you'll just stand next to them and say, okay, now concentrate, and you go, oh, I know where it is. And you feel like there's something pushing the small of your back. And this is
it's
a form,
moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's a form of, I know a lot of guys, oh, well, that's just a bunch of crap. You know, it's delusion, but it really isn't.
We got to get started, you know, somewhere. You know, the psychophysiological thought reading, as Banachek likes to call it, the book's title, you know, is that you start off kind of small, but the more you exercise a muscle, just like we're talking about other kinds of things, I think you do start to develop a better idea because you kind of know from their body action, of their eyes, some gestures, maybe the tenseness in one hand or the body.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure that, you know, we go back and try to rationalize it. I'm not convinced that you can tell anything by body language because it's so personal to each person. You know, so it's so individual. And that's what Bird Whistle said, the inventor of body language. He said, you know, if someone rubs their nose, you know, they're lying. Well, maybe not. But he said you have to study a person over time to really get their lexiconography of body language. But there is something. You know, sometimes they'll just touch you, and you go, I know where it is. It's just this moment, this insight, and this flash.
Wasn't it a Christopher Walken movie? It seems like whenever he touched somebody.
That was The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone. Yeah.
Stephen King novel.
Yeah. That was it.
And sometimes you do that when you're doing a reading. You'll be doing the reading. You're interpreting the oracle. You're using your stream of consciousness connection. And then you just know something about them. You go, oh, this person. In this marriage, they had a marriage, and in that marriage, the person, you know, the other, and you just get this insight about them.
Yeah.
Where you go, oh, as a kid, they had a sister who lock them in a closet, and that's why they're claustrophobic. And it's just this knowledge that comes to you, and yeah. it's really
and they immediately break down in tears, like, oh, that's it. You're
exactly yeah. right. Well, you know what the wound is that as a reader or a healer,
yeah.
yeah, that you and you don't want to just blurt that out. It's not like, okay, you pick the that's yeah. what that's what mental. Well, I don't mentalists shouldn't do readings because they think that doing reading is like. Is the psychic equivalent of, oh, you pick the ace of diamonds. It's all about getting hits. And that's not what it's about. If you're doing readings, even if you're doing it in entertainment, you're dealing with people who are wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And you can accidentally, and this is the same with hypnosis, you can accidentally really open a wound just by throwing, you know, cold reading lines out and trying to hook them. And I just shiver when I think about mentalists doing readings, because they can just say something that they read in a book as a cold reading line and stab somebody very deep. And then what are you going to do? Because they don't really know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So
there's no hospital they can go to for that wound.
Yeah. yeah. So, you know, what are you going to do? Here's somebody, male or female, who was molested as a kid, and you use that four line, you know, your sexual development presented some difficulty for you, and they'd been molested as a kid, and then they start freaking out, and you, what did I do?
Yeah. yeah.
So no, you got to be very careful with that sort of thing. But I've been doing it a long time. I grew
yeah.
up in a family of psychics. I've been doing it since I was 12, and my mom and my grandma, they were very, very good at this. You know, they weren't
seventh son of a seventh son.
Yeah, born with a call under the full moon, with the wolves a howling at the door, direct descendant of Marie Laveau and the privateer John Lafitte.
Well, listen, as we start to wrap up over here, and mm-hmm. I wanted to thank you again for coming
yes.
and spending a little bit of time and chatting with us on this.
Oh, well,
The name of my podcast, then, by the way, then, John, is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is John Riggs' magic word? What is it that is your life force? What is it that's important to you? It wouldn't necessarily have to be a word. It could be a phrase. It could be a...
Accountability.
That's a wonderful one.
Yeah.
And certainly, everything we've just talked about can all be summed up also in that word accountability, because you are accountable for what you say to someone else and what you are trying to bring out of them or bring into their life, and you are accountable.
I think all the time about everything I say and do in every aspect of my life, probably too much. And
how this is going to affect somebody's life.
Everything I say and do. And,
yeah.
My girlfriend will tell you that. People who have known me have said I overanalyze myself and I overanalyze the effects of everything I do and say probably too much. And I'll tell you that one time I got into some counseling just to deal with some issues, and this therapist said, you have overanalyzed every aspect of your life more than anyone I've ever talked to. And he said, I can't think of anyone I've ever talked to who knows himself as thoroughly inside and out as you do.
Hmm.
And that's one thing I can tell you about me. I know who I am. I know exactly who I am, and this is why I think I have a clear conscience, and this is why I'm comfortable with myself, and why accountability is so important to me, because, you know, there are people who do not think about the consequences of their actions, and they leave wreckage in their path, and accountability to me is such an important thing, and we all have to be accountable to ourselves, to others, to the world. Like I said, you go down here in this casino, it reeks of tobacco smoke and
right.
desperation. And there's no accountability down there.
That's true. That was great. That's a good note to finish on right there. John Riggs, thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you, Scott.
And for the magic word and at Mindvention, this is Scotty out.
Hi, Scotty here again. Do you like the Magic Word podcast? If you do, you can help us by liking us on the Facebook page for the Magic Word podcast. Or you can also just leave a comment here on the magicwordpodcast.com website. Or if you're downloading through iTunes, please leave a comment and favorable ratings there on the iTunes store. As always, it would be extremely helpful and deeply appreciative if you could leave a donation via PayPal. If you just go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, up on the top left hand of the splash page, you will see a button for donate now. It would be awfully helpful to keep the doors open and our microphone running and help us to deliver quality podcasting material about magicians, for magicians, by a magician, here on themagicwordpodcast.com. Thank you, however you choose to support us, because we certainly appreciate it. For now, Scotty out.